First up on the High Velocity Radio Show, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman who is the president, chief executive officer, grand poobah of an outfit called ViStar. Welcome to the show, Bill Doyle.
Thanks for having me on the Monday after Thanksgiving.
Did you pick up just a little bit of cynicism?
No. Just maybe a little.
Well, we are delighted to have you, Bill. How about giving us a quick overview of ViStar? What kind of products and services you guys are providing for the marketplace?
We're a raw material supplier. We take natural rubber latex as soon as it comes out of the tree. We apply our patented process to it. We remove the proteins. There are about 15 proteins that cause allergies in people. So we take them out in the raw material state. That way we can sell into this $3 billion industry.
Stone had no idea that rubber comes out of trees. I was looking at the video that you produced.
That's where I learned that rubber came out of trees.
Well, I was wondering why the heck has he got trees in his video? And it was just fascinating to learn. So tell us a little bit more about that process.
I just thought the trees were pretty.
Oh, no,
so
I
we decided to put them up
video.
There for that. Latex grows 25 degrees on either side of the equator. So whether you're driving your Tylenol van on it, or whether you're using it to produce a glove or a catheter or a condom or an adhesive or anything like that, it's coming out of a tree. It comes out looking like skim milk. In order to be processed, it needs to look like whole milk. We fit into that process to remove those proteins. So whether you're looking at tires or anything else where you've got rubber as well as latex, it's a natural product. It's not synthetic, and you're not alone. I ran focus groups with some of the biggest OR nurses from the biggest institutions in the country a couple years ago, and out of the 40 of them over the course of a few days of focus groups, there were two of them that knew that latex was natural.
In a million years, I wouldn't have thought latex was a natural product, and that's what differentiates your company. In fact, you have this Vitex NRL, or natural rubber latex.
Correct.
So tell us about that. That's the magic behind your company. Explain how that all came to be.
Well, my business partner, when we started ViStar, is a gentleman named Travis Honeycutt. He's a Georgia Tech chemical engineer. He is... he thinks in terms of carbons, hydrogens, and oxygens. A friend of his approached him and said, you're holding about 110 patents. What exactly is it that you could do to take care of the problems with natural rubber latex? I believe he had a daughter who was a nurse who could no longer practice because she couldn't wear the gloves back then. And so Travis started looking at what he could do to gloves, and we realized that gloves are as much a commodity market as natural rubber latex is itself. So what could we do to the raw material and then tap into just this $3 billion non-tire? And he came up with a method of how to extract it from the liquid without harming the liquid, because it's really actually pretty tender when it comes to the producing the natural rubber latex itself.
So what are the problems? You mentioned earlier taking proteins out, so that must solve some of the problems. But what are the problems associated with this?
They can be fairly benign, where you'll see a rash, or you may see contact dermatitis. Like, let's say you had a Band-Aid on, and when you took the Band-Aid off, you saw two red spots where the adhesive was. The adhesive on there is generally part latex. Mm-hmm. It goes away. You won't have a problem with it until you put a Band-Aid on again and leave it on for a little while. That's one of the issues.
That could be very disturbing on a particular suite of latex-based products that come to mind to me.
I know where you're going with that, and we will definitely get into that, because that's one of our claims to fame here.
Uh-huh.
But just keeping it clean here for a little while. It could get worse. I mean, you could really start to develop issues where, even when it's removed, especially a nurse or a physician who's worn those gloves day in and day out, mm-hmm. they can really develop scaly, really bad hands and all that just don't go away. That's a latex protein allergy. And then the worst is to actually go into anaphylactic shock, or to have something like an asthmatic if you're just in the presence of something that's got latex in it. Sort of what was going on with planes and why they weren't giving peanuts anymore. It wasn't just that people who were sensitive to that ate the peanuts and had a problem. They were just in the vicinity of it.
Just being around it was dangerous for some of them, wasn't it?
Correct.
Well, anaphylactic shock would definitely ruin that moment.
It would.
I see why there'd be value.
Could dampen the mood.
Now that I use my thick head, it makes perfect sense that a Band-Aid's got latex in it. But I imagine if you were to go around the studio, you could probably identify 50 things that have latex in it. How prevalent is this? I mean, I imagine it's more common than we, more frequent than we realize.
40,000 products.
40,000 products.
40,000 products. But for the majority of us, there's 3% of the general population that have an issue with natural rubber latex. Okay. And that's just a benign issue. That's like the Band-Aid coming on and coming off. Then it gets up into about 17% of healthcare workers. So you could see how it's not necessarily acquired, but it builds up. The average hospital bed uses 75 gloves per day.
Now,
that's a lot of exposure for who is ever going in to take a temperature or change an IV. The average surgeon is wearing his gloves or her gloves for 8 hours a day. That's a lot of exposure.
And can ruin a very promising career if he or she has an allergy to that.
If it weren't for the synthetics that are prevalent, especially in the exam glove market, and they're somewhat into the surgical glove market, but not totally. There are quite a few of my early private investors that are surgeons who had to change and do what they were doing using a different type of glove, and they really don't want to see latex leave the operating room.
Okay, so we refer to this as natural rubber latex. Is there such a thing as unnatural rubber latex, or this is what you mean by the synthetic product? Or
yeah, the term latex is actually very broad, and the synthetics actually are called latex. They're not called natural rubber, but they are called latex, synthetic latex.
Which is a little bit of a misnomer, though.
I think so. I think so. I think there should be a much bigger distinction because the synthetics come out of petroleum byproducts. So let's talk about dependence on foreign oil.
Yeah.
Let's talk about things that are non-green. I mean, latex, the trees take 7 years to mature. 25 years you can tap the tree. They cut them down. They use them for furniture in Southeast Asia, Guatemala and all. And then you put an oak tree up in its place. And you just continue on with that whole eco concept. So tell me what happens when you're done pumping oil out of the Gulf and you run our cars and we've produced our synthetics. Where are you going with that? It's going to be around for the next ice age, whereas a balloon that's made out of natural rubber latex spends about as much time in the environment as an oak leaf. It's pretty interesting.
So, you know, Todd and I, we're easily distracted by shiny things. We're easily impressed. We're buying into everything you have to say here. But what about the manufacturer? You know, the people that are out there making products and services, do you find them a little bit resistant sometimes when you try to go to them with this product and they're using the other?
It depends on the industry, but in many cases it was very resistant. We launched this product exactly at the time that the recession hit. So people,
who made that call?
we were going to talk about mistakes later on
okay,
at the end of the show.
We'll hold that.
It wasn't necessarily my call, but it was when the product was ready. I mean, we created this in beakers and Erlenmeyer flasks, and knew that we had to get this up to production grade, which was about a metric ton, and the average order is about 20 metric tons. It's a tanker that would come in and fill the tanks in one of these manufacturing spaces. We had to go out and create a calculator to show the manufacturers that we were going to save them at least a little bit of money on the back end in order to justify this new type of latex raw material.
You mentioned green earlier. Is this a green product?
Yeah, it's very green. Very, very green.
And are there some specific criteria that you have to meet to be allowed to go out and say that it's green, or you just have to be really articulate and emphatic in describing it?
No, I could be as articulate and emphatic here as possible, and all we might get is false advertising. I really don't know. Yes, there are criteria, and the criteria vary depending on what type of green you want to have. There was an interesting article in the New York Times recently that talked about how I believe it's the FCC is about to start regulating these claims that a lot of these so-called green companies are making.
I'll bet.
Here's an example for you. People are now big time into soy mattresses. Soy mattresses.
We got to get that guy on too. I've never heard of
him
soy.
On. That would be a fun
okay.
show.
Soy. Just let me do point counterpoint then, okay? Soy mattresses are 10% soy, and they're 90% polyurethane. A natural rubber latex mattress is 100% natural rubber latex.
So let me ask you this.
Significant
question.
Difference. Yet they can put their eco-friendly on their label and sell it at Walmart.
Is there an advantage to using a Vitex NRL condom on a soy mattress? Next question.
We can edit that out.
Okay, we're definitely going to take this down that route. So let's go to the condom questions right now. We were able to show the FDA that the manufacturer who was producing this Envy condom that uses Vitex, we were able to show them that for the first time they could put an antigenic protein claim on a label, and that's the first product that has that. Prior to that, they would only go with a 50 micrograms claim, and they stuck to that. But we were able to show consistent test data to show that there are about 260 proteins that are in natural rubber latex. 15 of them cause a problem. 5 of them are severe. We don't discriminate. We just remove them all.
Your process gets rid of all of them.
Yes, it does.
Wow.
And it doesn't harm the latex. Prior attempts to do this either capped them off and left them in, or were just so cumbersome that it took the expense to be so high. Now, with a condom, in order to get this kind of claim, we had to show the protein level. We had to show the fact that the condoms were able to pass all the stringent tests. There are a lot more tests that are done on a condom in manufacturing than there are in a surgical glove, just to show you wow. how important that aspect of it was. And C. Everett Koop, when he was Surgeon General, he didn't say use a condom to prevent the spread of AIDS. He said use a latex condom, because it's the best barrier properties. So the reason why it's important in the condom industry is because people will present and think they've got a sexually transmitted disease. They've got a rash. They've got that contact dermatitis that we talked about with adhesives. They go in, they get tested, they find out, well, no, they don't have anything. Okay, phew. The next time they practice safe sex, there it is again. And it's actually more on the female side than it is on the male side. So they either use nothing, or they might go to some of the other alternatives, which are twice as expensive, which would be good because at least they're still practicing safe sex. But the reason why a Vitex condom is so important is because we've removed those proteins, we've maintained the barrier properties. So whether they want to have fun on a Vitex mattress or a Soy mattress or whatever, just as long as they're using an Envy condom, that's what's good.
You mentioned manufacturers were initially resistant. Is it because it's more expensive to use the product? But can't they ultimately save money and maybe even energy and water?
Yeah, actually, in the dipped goods products, like a surgical glove, there are some surgical manufacturers that in order to get those proteins out of there, they will leach, rinse, and dry 5 times. That's a lot of water, that's a lot of heat, and that's a lot of energy. With one of the groups that we're working with in Southeast Asia, where they've launched their glove, they can get a much, much lower protein level by using one rinse and one dry with Vitex than they can with the three that they're doing now on an exam glove. That's a lot of savings. I talked to an Indian manufacturer of surgical gloves, and they are into the penalty phase of their water usage by the third working day of the month.
Oh, wow.
I mean, think about how big India is and think of the location and figure out with that type of a population exactly how precious water is. So by them being able to do that, that's significant for them to add a Vitex glove to their line.
So I want to switch gears on you here for a moment, because I'm always interested, and Todd is too, in how organizations from a variety of industries go to market, how they tell their story. And I, for you guys, it's probably going to be a non-issue after today's show, because you've hit the big time. You're on the High Velocity Radio Show. But how do you go to market? Do you have a group of distributors out there selling your product? Do you have a direct sales force? How do you get your stuff to market?
Actually, we have both. But The biggest way we got this to market was by participating in the industry events and giving papers. We gave our first paper back in July of 2005. And I did that before the product was ready, because I didn't want some of the big companies thinking I was going to produce a Vitex glove and starting to hit me already. I wanted them to know that I was going to sell them Vitex so they could produce their gloves, and I wasn't about to incur those marketing costs. I have 2 full-time sales reps. Mm-hmm. But then I have a myriad of distributors and salespeople all throughout the world who handle this product for us.
And so there's the obvious that come to mind, the condoms, the gloves, and mattress for me wasn't even a little bit obvious. What are some other products that might, you know, most of us wouldn't even think about that are really have latex?
Balloons.
Yeah.
We will take a huge balloon manufacturer who is taking Vitex on as a replacement product starting in January, and they sell it to the major amusement parks. And the reason they're doing that is because they can get the color perfect, because there is no non-rubber issue with latex. So when they have to get a specific pigment, then they'll go with Vitex. Or if they want clarity for an outside balloon with something inside it, like some of the amusement parks do, that clarity comes just with Vitex naturally, as opposed to them having to manipulate it. So the one thing they said to me is, yeah, come on, talk to me, but if you mention the word protein, I'm kicking you out the door. So we didn't have to do that because we had so many other attributes. Foam was the big one for me. I had no idea. I mean, we work with a company in Canada that produces the insoles for the Canadian market, and that's all Vitex. The adhesive on self-stick envelopes, the adhesive that's on napkin rings when you go to a restaurant, the napkin and the silverware is all wrapped up. So I would say that one of the other big surprises for me was adhesives, because Vitex has a really good tack to it, so it dries quickly, but then it maintains that tack longer than normal adhesive does. So that was pretty surprising. And then the other that you were talking about, you probably find 50 things. Just think about threads. If it's elastic and it maintains its memory and it's not spandex, it's generally natural rubber latex thread. And that's how a lot of people have that kind of exposure. So, I mean, if we're talking condoms and if you do wear underwear, generally you've got that in the band. Same thing with bra straps. Same thing with the top of your socks, gym clothing. Latex is everywhere.
It's everywhere.
You don't even realize
it's everywhere.
That's fascinating. You know, it's not that you're going to dominate the world. I mean, before the show, you were sharing some revenue numbers for the company, and it seemed like a very, very strong projection from this year to next. Tell us a little about that. It sounds like things are going well so far.
It is, and as a matter of fact, it's almost at the time where people tend to think that it might be unbelievable, but we actually have orders, and we actually have plans, and we actually have agreements in place for next year, and we do take this from maybe on average this year of about $1 million on up to 14 to 16 million next year. And that's a significant jump. It's a significant responsibility on our part to be able to supply that on a regular basis, because latex is a commodity. I mean, the price fluctuates. Right now it's at an all-time high, which means that's good for me as I sell, but that also means that when I buy the raw material and process it, my costs are higher. But, it's looking like a very, very good 2011.
Yeah, that sounds real good.
So you get the stuff, you get the raw material, you do your magic, which is a patented process that other people can't do right now. Is that right?
Correct.
And then you deliver it to these manufacturing concerns. And so is it a milky consistency? Is that what you're delivering, is tanks of this milky consistency without all the – you take all the bad stuff out?
We take out all the non-rubbers and the non-rubber particles, and it comes out looking like skim milk. And then all latex is centrifuged and processed. I mean, that's just the way latex is. And we fit right into that process, and we have two patents. We've got another 2 to 3 that are pending right now. And it looks like about whole milk when it's shipped, and it could be shipped in a metric ton tote. I mean, it could be shipped in a tanker. There are some mattress people who just take a train tanker, pull it in, pump it into their facility, and send the tanker back.
But it's a better product when they get it. And if you do your math right and stay on top of what you're doing, you're going to end up with a higher profit margin and or be able to take it to your consumer at a lower price because of the energy savings and all of that. Yeah.
Well, I certainly hope they'll take it to the consumers at a lower price.
That's their call.
We're never not sure about that. I mean, remember, I'm a raw material producer. I sell to them.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. A couple things we'd like to do before we let you go. One, we want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you or your team so they can learn more about your products and services and how to take advantage of this incredible technology you're bringing to the market.
The best way is our website, and it's vitex.com, and that is V-Y-T-E-X.com. Very simple.
Terrific. You don't want to give them your home number to call you during dinner.
Somehow, some way, I think people can find that out anyway.
Somebody
so
has
I
that
just,
number.
Yeah.
Get it from him, right?
That's right.
That guy called me the other night, so I know it's probably the same guy.
So
right?
It was you that passed it on, huh?
Yeah, it was me.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, listen, before we do let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, Bill, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Sure. When I worked with Travis before, we started a company here in Atlanta. I wasn't at anywhere near the level that I am now. I was the head of marketing back then. And when we came out with a really good raw material, we decided that we were going to reap the benefits of selling the finished good. So rather than selling to the big boys who were already producing the garments that were made out of these types of raw materials, we bought a little company, and we did a secondary stock offering, and we put up plants, and we bought manufacturing machinery out of Germany and shipped it over and decided we were going to compete with the big guys. And they crushed us like there was no tomorrow. That's why you'll see that we will support people like the NV Condom or the glove maker where I go to Japan and help them sell into their dental market, or the mattress with almost like an Intel inside. But I'm not making a I'm not making a finished good, because it really did cripple a very, very good company quite a few years ago. We won't do that again.